Hello, thank you for joining us for what should be a great game.
The fourth official couldn't allow him on because the fourth official never had the sheep.
Well, he overheated up the baby, did he? Unless he's breastfeeding, he should be all right.
Good morning and welcome to this edition of the Football Family. As you can tell by the high-pitched voice, I am not very comfortable doing this. I am David Snaid. Hello, Shane Keegan.
You're not Gavin Cooney. What's happened?
I know. Well, in fairness, we're coming towards the end of June. So the schools are becoming to come out, so I am like the pathetic substitute teacher who people are going to take the piss out of. So I have absolutely no idea how badly this podcast is going to go. And Gav has gone on a turf-cutting holiday across Europe, I believe.
Very nice for him, isn't it? If you're the student teacher, I got to be the student. Do I have to introduce myself as my name is Amanda Buttoncase or something like the one of those pretend names, so that when I do get in trouble, you've got the wrong guy?
Well, in fairness, now you should have a different name for all the different jobs you have now. No, you could have a different.
You had a pop last week that I hadn't enough jobs, so I had to try and find another.
I know. Yeah, fair play. Busiest man in Irish football. until Mark Cannon gets his feet under the table and he really gets an idea of what's going on.
Very true.
In fairness, Gav is on a well-deserved break. In fairness, he had a good story last week as well about the Waterford. I know we're going to be getting more into this, and you've had a big week as well. But I did want to just start on that Waterford story a little bit, just because fair play to Gav, he was ruffling some feathers. Obviously, if people have missed it, I don't know how you would have the story up on the 42.ie last week about Waterford looking to sell.
It's always a good sign when a League of Ireland's official kind of press releases mentioning you and talking about you, isn't it?
I know.
It's a badge of honour for Gav anyway, that's for sure. But
I'd say, and in fairness, if Gav's not here, and it's a shame because in fairness it was a great line to get, but the fact as well, the statement was brilliant because it was basically saying, I can't believe this just journalist has got this story. It wasn't actually pouring scorn on saying it was an outrage that a journalist broke this story. But listen, we will discuss a little bit about that later. But before we do, we have got a chat with the one and only Emma Duffy, who will be joining us. So I'm going to have a little chat with her about the Irish women's team, who had a fantastic, absolutely, is it fair to say that they absolutely hockeyed Georgia last night?
It certainly is, yeah. Unbelievable scoreline. We won't go into it too much, but I mean, my God, poor Georgia must be sick of the sight of a green jersey and sick of the sight of Katie McCabe.
Well, that's it. And listen, I'm gonna get the full breakdown of that with Emma when she pops in and has a chat later on. But first, Shane, tell us about your week.
No news, Gav. I even called you Gav. No news, David. No news. Quiet week. It was hectic. Hectic last 48 hours or so, or maybe even a little more than that, 72 hours probably, to be honest. Cove obviously took the decision last weekend to make a change. They announced that they were moving on from Darren Murphy last, when was it, Saturday or Sunday or that. And I was actually working my day job on Thursday evening just past. I was, my duties that evening as a full-time employee of Laois GAA was, I was sitting up in the commentary box in O'Moore Park. They were having the O'Moore Park experience where they bring in all the under 11 teams, hurling and Gaelic football teams, to play a match on O'Moore Park. It's very cool, in fairness. And my job was to introduce all the teams. The teams change every half an hour, so to introduce all the teams. And the best bit is, at the start of every half an hour, I have to play the national anthem. It's great crack.
No way.
So the kids get to stand to the national anthem on the pitch, but it's mad. So I was in the middle of doing all that when I saw a couple of missed calls from Bill O'Leary, who is the Cove chairman. I would know Bill. So the backstory here, David, is I interviewed for the Cove job about 2.5 years ago, I'd say, there or thereabouts. Can't remember who had departed at the time. But I went and I interviewed for it at the time, and it went very, very well, kind of. And I got a phone call back from Bill at the time, and we kind of had a chat about me potentially coming in, and they were quite keen to bring me in. And that was on a Saturday, and that Saturday night I actually drove down to Cove because I was thinking, I looks like I'm going to be managing these next week. Like, I need to watch them tonight. They were playing a match on the Saturday night, as you know. I was saying I need to watch them tonight. I'm probably going to be managing them next week, and they were playing. I think it was Shells were top of the table at the time. It was either Shells or Limerick. One of them was running away with the league at the time. I can't remember which it was, depending on the season, one or the other anyway. And they did very well on the night, and it was kind of, I was leaving the stadium and it looked like it was going to be a nil-all draw, and I was thinking, Jesus, Stuart Ashton had gone in as just interim manager, you know. And I was kind of thinking to myself, Jesus, Stewie's done well here. He might, you know, he might have bought himself a little bit of time in the interim role. And as I was walking out the gate, they actually scored an injury time winner, Cove. So they bet them. Yeah, and I got into the...
I say you are sick in there.
Exactly, like... So I got into the car and I'm driving down the road going to myself, Jesus, this man is definitely going to deserve another couple of games after a result like that. And off he went on... I think he went on a run of winning 5 of the next 6 games or something like that as interim manager. And Cove had kind of stayed in touch with me and basically just says, listen, Shane, we absolutely have to give the man the job based on what he's done since. And obviously I said, you're right, you do. Like, sure, you could not give it to him. He'd gone on a phenomenal run. So I suppose I kind of... a bit of a relationship and kind of maintained contact with Bill since back then. He'd ring me the odd time about a player to bounce stuff off me and that kind of stuff. So there's always kind of been an open enough channel of communication there. So I didn't think anything massively untoward. I thought he might be actually looking to bounce some other managers' names off me possibly. But yeah, I also had a missed call from Treaty. So I phoned back the missed call from Treaty, and it was somebody at the club, a good guy in there, John Fennessy, ringing me to let me know they'd had official contact from Cove Ramblers looking for permission from the club to speak to me. And he basically just said, look, Shane, we absolutely don't want to lose you and we want to hold on to you, but we're not going to stand in your way. If you want to give Cove a call and have a chat around the opportunity and see what the story was. So yeah, that was Thursday night, and it kind of all... rolled on fairly quickly from there. Cove kind of made it clear that I was the man that they wanted, and immediately start, you know, once I showed any interest at all, start trying to discuss potential terms around, you know, myself and around budgets and around backroom and all of that kind of stuff. In fairness to Treaty, they then made a play to try and explain to me why they felt it would be best to stay where I was and the role that I was doing there and how important that was. So they were fantastic, David. Genuinely, they were absolutely fantastic to me the whole way through it, because, like, truth be told, I was never happy with the way I handled things when I moved from Wexford to Galway. I was a lot young, not to let myself off the hook too much now, but I was a bit younger, I was a bit more naive, and I was very conscious this time around of the fact that I didn't handle the move to Wexford to Galway at all well. It still doesn't sit with me, and I just, you know, it's not me, and I lost a bit of, you know, I wouldn't blame anybody who lost a bit of respect for me, because I lost a bit of respect for myself. I let the old...
Really, yeah. What was it that, what do you reckon, what are you holding against yourself?
Obviously, the timing of it obviously was a massive, massive issue, so it was, but even just, you know... once there was communication there, I should have been more upfront about it from the off, and you'd question whether I should have ever made the move at all, really, although, you know, there was brilliant people at Galway and that, but just, I didn't, just the way I handled myself with, you know, with Wexford, and that, particularly Mick, like, Mick had been absolutely amazing to me, you know. So I was determined this time around that I was going to listen to all sides, be as open and honest as I could with all sides, and to be fair, that's very much how it played out. And yeah, I suppose as of kind of Sunday morning, I kind of made up my mind, yeah, look, I want to do this. Spoke to Treaty, confirmed with them that, yeah, look, I want to give it a rattle despite their the good efforts that they made to turn my head back in their direction. So yeah, that was Sunday. So landed down in Cove yesterday evening, straight into a first training session. Here we go. Good. Very, very good. I just have to set my mind at ease with the fact that I'd be kind of an OCD head and I want everything absolutely perfect from the off. And it's just impossible to get everything perfect from the off in that short of a turnaround. Normally, obviously, going into a season or a new gig, you have a whole pre-season and you have PowerPoints presented to the lads and you do workshops with them to explain how you like to go about things and get them in your line of thinking and all that kind of stuff. We quite simply don't have the time for all of that. So it'll be a case of trying to get everything that I want in place I suppose, between now and the end of July. Like, it's not going to be in place before Friday night's game. Not a hope in hell. So it, like, things like, you know, getting to know the lads a bit better and, you know, getting to know the ins and outs of the club, assembling a backroom staff, all of that you would like to have done before your first game. I'm going to be nowhere near having all that done before our first game. So I just need to set my mind at ease with that and realise that it's going to be a kind of a layering approach over the course of July of adding this and that, or sorry, over the course of July adding this and then adding that and then adding that. And hopefully by the end of July, the setup kind of in general looks like how I would want it to look like.
That set up and even players, I'm guessing obviously Oscar Brennan will be a key component. That fella has ruffled some feathers in the League of Ireland over the last while. I'll be honest, some of the stuff we saw was an absolute disgrace. Other stuff I thought was quite funny.
Mention myself there, all right? Yeah.
I know, but this is the thing, right? And I was gonna say, and you kind of mentioned on it, but it does show you, like, let's be honest, I think the reason why Oscar maybe was quite happy to say stuff and be as open as, because he clearly knows his League of Ireland days are behind him, isn't he? He's heading off. But the importance of that, what you were saying there about maintaining, say, relationships. So a couple of years ago when you would have been in touch with Cove and still having that relationship, the bit of a back and forth, even going to games, like, it's so important, isn't it? Just that, like, it is an element, and it's just as important as anything else in terms of doing an interview. It's that constant being maintaining relationships with people.
Absolutely, and the relationship goes back even further, to be honest with you, David. The reason it goes back even further is because when I was managing Wexford, there was only two teams in the League of Ireland who played on a Saturday night, Cove and Longford, which meant we'd play every Friday night, and pretty much every single Saturday I got into the car and drove to either Cove or Longford. One of the two of them was likely to be playing on the Saturday, so it gave you a chance to look at opposition. This was before Y Scout bloody existed. Now it's just click of a button and you can watch everything back. You had no choice but to drive to all these games back then, kind of 2014, 2015 kind of time. So yeah, you get to know a lot of people down around Cove, because I was literally in Cove twice a month. Like, I was there probably every second Saturday night. So you got to know people initially down there via that. But no, look, it's not to sound cliche, what else am I going to say other than it's a great little club? It is a great club. And look, it's again, from my point of view, like, okay, exclude Dundalk, right? Because Dundalk was an experience, but we're not going to claim for a moment that I was actually managing Dundalk, right? Everybody knows the real crack there. So,
hold on, elaborate
on that. So my last time properly managing a team, planning the sessions, picking a starting 11, all of that is 2018 when I left Galway. And Galway obviously didn't go as well as I would have wanted it to go. So therefore, when you're coming back into your next proper gig in your own right, you need to be going in somewhere where, you know, you do have a strong relationship with the board and you do think they're not expecting overnight success, and you do know you're going to be given a bit of breathing space and a bit of time to put your own stamp on it, and all of that exists. And, you know, those kinds of things were far more important in terms of my next role than, well, how successful can we be, or how big is my playing budget, or anything like that. We went back to the club after the training session last night. Training session was excellent. The boys were really, really impressive now, so they were. But we went back to the clubhouse after it for a chat, just to sit down, and literally 15 minutes, me doing a bit of an intro and kind of general plans for the next while. And, you know, to put you in an idea of what we're talking about here, I said at the end of it, I said, look, communication is going to be a massive thing. I says, we all have lives, you know, none of us are going to be making big money at this level, that's for sure. I said, everybody needs to have a work-life balance. So I said, the most important thing is that I know of anything that you've got coming up, and I'm not finding out about it at the last minute. So, you know, if there's anything coming up over the next couple of months, just come to me at the end of this chat and we'll address it at the time. So I finished my chat. Jesus, you want to see the queue of people? You want to see the queue of people in front of me? Oh, one lad's getting married himself. Another lad's sister is getting married. Another lad has a 2-week holiday booked somewhere. And that, you know, that's the reality of life at this level. Like, they're barely meeting their travel expenses. Nobody's making any money of it. So you can't put your whole life on hold for it at this stage. So yeah, look, they're the kind of things that you have to navigate over the next few weeks. But it'll be fun.
Well, that's it. Listen, best of luck. Thank you. Hopefully, he'll still be dropping in. Fingers crossed.
Absolutely. No. Look, I think by and large, our old chats tend to be more around Irish players in England and the international team, and I suppose a bit of League of Ireland Premier. But I'll try and remain as unbiased as possible in all our chats and conversations.
Well, in fairness, Gav seemed devastated. He messaged me privately on WhatsApp, and I've never seen him so angry. He was absolutely fuming. But listen, at the other end, like, I was at Richmond Park last night. Actually, as a fan, I brought my nephew. Actually, do you know what, right? What's your thoughts on this? So obviously, listen, Rovers, I think they were the better side. They won 2-0, quite comfortable in the end. Two moments of magic, really, that maybe Pats just didn't have. 2-1. Actually nearly walked out before that goal. That's another thing I'll discuss. But my nephew was 6, nearly 7. He's already been a mascot at a Pats match this season, yet he insisted on bringing one of those signs asking for a jersey. I'll be honest, like, normally when I see them now and it's grown-ups, I think it's the most disgusting thing in the world. When it's kids, I kind of think... But when it's kids, I'm also kind of thinking, I guarantee that the grown-up has actually done
that.
They
want
that jersey.
Yeah.
Now, I was trying to talk my nephew out of this. And listen, this is something that I want the listeners to get involved with for next week, because I want to come back to this, because I've seen a few kids behind the goal having these little banners. So do please get in touch with us and let us know, what are your thoughts? Have you tried to talk your child or a relative or anyone out of bringing it? Because I was a little bit perturbed by it. Like, I've held my nephew in high esteem for the last little while, and this kind of did knock him down a couple of little pegs.
Whose jersey did he want?
Well, I didn't mind it. It was Forrester's.
I thought so.
Like, Forrester, yeah. And in fairness as well, like, Forrester lives around the corner from him, and he kind of sees him around the place, and he kind of, which I think is great as well, he buzzes off Forrester, and he buzzes off, like, he's buzzing off the League of Ireland. It was actually great. He was, like, always going to collect them, from your ma's, and there was, like, kids out on the green, and they were all giving each other dogs abuse, because a few of them are Rovers fans, and he's the only Pats fan. Because it's, like, around the corner, so...
He should just get his sign and walk up to Forrester's front door and knock on the door. And when Forrester opens the door, he's just standing there with the sign asking for the jersey. Well, would that not be easier?
It's funny, right? He actually bumped into him. He bumped into him in one of the shops around the corner in Leuken. And he went up and he was, like, talking to him. And he said, do you remember me? I was a mascot at the match and all the rest of it. And then I think he was going in to buy match attacks. And he thought Forrester was going to buy him a pack of match attacks. No, he didn't, obviously. But he came out and said to his dad, he says, just get the lovely fella. Get the lovely fella.
Very old man saying.
I know. But in fairness, he came out away from that match and he was happy he saw Pat score. He was happy with getting a hot chocolate. He wasn't really too fussed about the result, really, although he got a few coarse words out. But it does look now as if Rovers, like, Rovers just had that little bit. The two goals I thought were exceptional. We were actually behind the goal where Randy Lyons scored. I thought it was a really good move. And then the second goal, Pat's defending was brutal, but Aaron Green took his goal very well.
All of a sudden,
10 points clear now.
Yeah, it was always going to happen eventually, wasn't it? I think, to be honest with you, that they were going to stretch out in front of everybody else. And, you know, the fact that Dundalk and Derry, like, they're just not going to be able to keep pace with them, so they're not. They're going to kind of yo-yo with results a little bit more, so they are. I was in the UCB Bowl on Friday night, where Derry got a much, much, much needed win, considering they were 7 without a win heading into Friday night. They weren't great, to be honest with you. They really weren't great. They really, really huffed and puffed with it. And the penalty was, like, it was a penalty, but it was like, whoever was playing right back, was playing right back because Boyce is out. And he played a diag, and it was like just a diag from inside his own half. And the right back from UCD jumped up on McGonigal's shoulders. And the ball was gone over both their heads and was heading out for a throw. And he jumped up on McGonigal's shoulders and McGonigal hit the deck, and it was their second or third penalty appeal. And I don't know if it was definitely a penalty, but he just shouldn't have given the referee a decision. So they won 1-0 courtesy of a penalty that came from absolutely nothing. So they were far from free flowing, now I can tell you, and huge room for improvement. But they did, most importantly, they did need 3 points to at least try and get them somewhat back on track. But look, Rovers will be absolutely unbackable favourites at this stage, won't they? I mean, that was a brilliant goal by Aaron Green last night. Like you said, the defending was poor now, but nutmeg followed by finish from impossible angle. That's a fair goal.
And you know what? I was looking at it, because obviously obviously he get the, it was in fairness, I don't know if you would have seen it, but basically even beforehand, Rory Gaffney on the opposite end, I'm talking about diagonal passes, Rory Gaffney gets the ball on the opposite side of the pitch, but does an unbelievable control and swivel turn and then picks Green out. And Green obviously is kind of waiting for supporting. Andy Lyons, which I think we might have been, it took him a bit of time to actually get up and support. So we kind of just realised we actually have to go here myself. Thought Scott was brutal for, like, thought really bad in terms of coming across. And then Andy Lyons, Darragh Bourne's, who had a couple of decent moments in the game, and I know he's been there watching, wasn't he? I think MK Dons were there watching him last night as well. Yeah, I think it wasn't the manager. I think I saw, it was Dan McDonald had tweeted that the manager of MK Dons, Liam Cannon, was there from MK Dons. He kind of does the right thing in trying to cover, but he kind of just gets sold so easy. It's like 2-1. And you see Gary O'Neill's reaction as well, where he has the hands on the head, but he just absolutely smashes it. And there's a delay. Like the Rovers fans, obviously, you see it. The Rovers fans, there's a split, a delay of a couple of seconds, because even they're thinking, there's no way.
Yeah, side net or there's something. There's no way. Yeah.
But it was just those little moments. And we're talking about Rovers, about the squad and all the rest of it. But, like, I know Dundalk would have two games in hand, but to have that lead before Europe as well, yeah, coming in, like, it's just, this is where now they're just going to go from strength to strength, like, you'd imagine, aren't they?
As you said about the squad, that was a Rovers team last night without Jack Byrne, Graham Burke, or Danny Mandrew.
Yeah, Roland Finn came on, like, as well. You know, he would. But it's just, yeah, it's looking ominous. I know we kind of believed, thought, you know what, there's going to be a race here when it was dirty, maybe, would they last the course, but they've dropped away. Dundalk have looked good, but it's going to be difficult, isn't it? Like, no, I don't think any team's capable of doing or putting a run together that Rovers are, even now with Europe, and they have that cushion now as well. Like, is it too early? Are we calling it?
I called it months ago. I think I called it before this ball was kicked. How do you stop a team with that much quality? I mean, it's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. No, it's. It was always going to be theirs. They were going to have to completely and utterly self-combust. I reckon possibly one of the only ways that they weren't going to win the league was if Bradley had made that move across the water. And then that would have even required him taking two or three lads with him, which could well have happened if he had made that move. But no, they won't be caught now. Just when you mentioned the MK Don scout, the other bits and bobs kind of movement-wise, obviously when I was up at the ball, word came through. When the team sheet came through and Liam Kerrigan on it, eyebrows were raised pretty quickly by everybody that, yeah, this is probably move related. And then it was confirmed by Andy Myler after the game that he's off to Serie B. Como, is it? Yeah. My mother got married at Lake Como. Got remarried at Lake Como. We were out there for a week. It was a lovely spot. I assume the club is based somewhere close to the lake.
I was going to say, that's decent. That's where they do the recovery, isn't it? It's no better place to do the recovery after a match. Pop down to the lake. And George Clooney goes there. He used to go to Cartown, but now he goes to Como instead. But that's it. It was a strange enough because, like, it looked as if, I know obviously there was maybe a couple of clubs in England looking at them. I think Rovers were kind of keen too. That one did seem to come out of the blue a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, I hadn't heard any whispers of it.
I hadn't heard any mention of it at all, but something you like obviously we were talking last week, weren't we, about Feyenoord are supposed to be interested in Sam Curtis as well, isn't it? And it is all a knock on effect of Brexit, but I think it would be brilliant for our players' development to head off to these sort of places. And it takes a lot of bravery as well, in fairness.
Well, that's it. And listen, you've mentioned Sam Curtis, right? And this is, I think, and this is a nice little segue into one of the articles I wrote over the weekend about Mikey Collins. But obviously Sam Curtis, only a young lad, 16, 17, Feyenoord coming in from, then he gets a really bad injury, you know, and it just shows you about time and about luck and the importance of a lot of things do have to go right for you as much as anything else when you're getting that break. And I did a piece over the weekend with Mikey Collins.
Anybody who hasn't seen it, like, I was actually sitting with, have you met Roddy with me, Ross King? No, you haven't. Sorry, it was Dan. I was sitting with a friend of mine the other night, and I said, as hooks go to pull you into a piece, the intro, your intro on that one, clubs in England want to sign you from the age of 11. At 13, Liverpool make sure you don't go anywhere else. You leave home at 16. By 17, you cancel the contract. What happens next? Like, it's about as good a hook for, so tell us, what did happen next? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, in fairness, I wish I actually had used that as the intro in the article rather than the little teaser on Twitter. But this is what, it's so like, Like, I remember Mikey. So Mikey's a couple of years younger than me. I remember him when he was playing for Treaty Orchard. And in fairness, Ben Blake, who was one of the assistant editors in the 42, he kind of just mentioned it in our little conference last week, you know, because he's a cousin. He's the older cousin of Nathan Collins. He's part of the whole Collins dynasty, and Nathan's dad, obviously David, went to Liverpool as well. And it's just a mad story. And that's what I asked him. I remember we met him for a coffee in Liffey Valley, and he actually said he took a couple of weeks off holiday from Irish Rail, thinking the World Cup would be on. And I think he might have been half joking, because like, he probably knew obviously the World Cup's going to be on the winter now in Qatar. But literally all these clubs after him, and he gets to England, and this is what I'm saying about luck and about timing and all the rest of it. And Steve Highway, who had been such, like, basically had tracked him for so long, had come over to the house in Dublin and made sure that he signed. And he was telling me that pretty much clubs knew from the age of 13 that he was going to go to Liverpool. Before that, he'd been at a lot of clubs going around, and even up till 13, he was still being brought over and being offered stuff. But then Liverpool pretty much had it sorted. But then within a year that Highway is gone, Liverpool are restructuring the academy. This new fella comes in, a Dutch coach comes in to oversee the academy. Begins to change the training methods. And now Mikey even said himself, like, obviously he would have been maybe young and a bit stubborn and headstrong, which, listen, so many kids are who maybe even have that ability and get to that stage. Like, they might have, or obviously maybe wired a bit differently, you know. But then, yeah, just like, there was a long move on offer to go to Sweden. He rejected that. Then he just decides to cancel the contract. And he kind of realises, he says, I remember saying, he was like, Wigan were in from, he's like, if I go to Wigan, there's no point, because that level of football, he wasn't physically ready for it. He wasn't the type of player who would, and so he wanted to try and go. You mentioned there as well about lads go to see for the development. He did, he went to, again, Serie B, actually, to Tristina, I think they were called, in the north, in Italy. Then he goes to Cyprus. Then he has a bad kidney infection, or it's a kidney stones, but really bad, severe ones, he was saying, where just constantly passing blood, and there's a prolonged period where he can't actually, like, get the operation that he needs, like shockwave treatment to just help him pass through and all the rest. And then he just comes home. And then it's one of those stories, he's only in his early 20s, he gets a chance to go to Holland, has a year in Holland in like the Tour de Fort tier it was. And then he just, like, one of them where he's been through so much. And it just goes to show, like, obviously you can have that talent at the start, but so much still has to go right for you. Like, you would have seen it being around in terms of just lads' progression and young lads you would have coached. Like, it must be so difficult to actually get, like, and that's what I was asking him. I was trying to suss it out with him and just find out, like, you kind of have so much expectation on your shoulders for so long, and then it can be gone so quickly as well.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, there's a couple of things that kind of come to mind as you say that. I mean, obviously this kind of started on a conversation about Liam Kerrigan. I mean, here's Kerrigan off away, and you talk about the element of luck, how much it plays in it. I mean, Colin Whelan, obviously, was supposed to, you know, they were both to go away. You know, there was even talks they might end up going to the same club together. I mean, the timing of Colin's injury is just, oh, jeez, I feel for him so much. Here's a fella who could have moved previously on a couple of occasions, but decided not to because he wanted to finish out his education. And he's then 1 month out from his final exams and getting ready to make that move on July 1st. And the next thing he's, you know, gets hit with an injury that puts him out for the rest of this season. And all of a sudden, everything is up in the air. And the other one that strikes me as well, as you talk again, just from first-hand experience, obviously, is Mikey Drennan. Because, you know, Mikey was the top goal scorer in the under-19 Champions League in the entire tournament. The year Villa went to the, I think they went, either went to the semi-final and were beaten, or went to the final and were beaten. So, I mean, he's, you know, top of the world at the time. And, you know, how quickly everything kind of unraveled for him. And, you know, he's been open about suffering from mental health issues and all of that kind of thing. And came back to the league, and, you know, initially, you know, the league kind of did take to things back here in the league. Had a, you know, really good stint at Shamrock Rovers, very good stint at Sligo Rovers, but I get on very well with Mike still now. Like, Mike is playing junior football with Evergreen, his side. Now, they are a very, very strong junior side. You know, they would be in the hat for, you know, in with a chance of winning most of the national competitions most years. But at the same time, to go from under-19 top goal scorer in under-19 Champions League to there, based on probably never not based in any way on a lack of ability, You know, Mike has as much ability as probably fellas, you know, playing 20, 30 games in the Premier League in England, but it's other issues that can stop it working out for you, you know.
And that's it, and that's even one of the like the aspects, and listen, it's probably something that we'll need to, we could probably do a full pod on it, and it's something that we should probably actually come back to as well, especially when Gav is here, because he can add some much needed balance and decorum before me just rambling off. But just even with what is happening with the underage leagues, because I do think obviously it's needed, but like I've made the point before, and so you know from Treaty as well, about I don't think it's about having just a copy in the system that's over in England, because you hear like Mikey's story and like so many, like Mikey Collins and Mikey Jordan, there's so many different stories. I think it's about having a balance between obviously with education and all the rest of it. Like, it has to be a cornerstone of what we're doing over here as much as anything else, especially when young lads who maybe want to go to England a bit, who can't now go to England a bit younger, you have to have something more for them to keep them here than just the football, especially for parents. And for me, that would have to be something to do with education. It used to be talk about college and all, but now it's even younger because of what's going on in terms of getting that quality education in junior set level and into the leaving cert. That's something we should definitely come back to, because I know we're going to have covered a lot in this podcast as well. You probably have training sessions to be planning now already, do
you? I'll tell you, the bigger concern is, you asked me earlier, do we need a 42.ie Zoom account for this call? Gav normally gets it going for us. And I said, no, we'll be fine on mine. Mine gives us a time limit of 45 minutes. It's flashing up here that we have 4 minutes left.
Okay, so how was we far does it? Do we go into now like some quick fire, almost like speed dating questions, just to get you, while Gav's not here, will you kind of get to know a bit more about each other, we just slag them off, will we cut our losses and say, do you know what, we haven't made a show of ourselves? I don't think so, anyway.
I think the best way maybe to try and wrap it up is, are we going to tell people where Gav is?
I think I know where he is. Are we allowed to say? Like I mentioned it about. I thought it was bizarre that he decided to go turf cutting across Europe after our last stacking places. Now, go on, you can fill the listeners in.
No, you know more than I do. I just heard he was kind of backpacking around Europe there, or climbing mountains, or something suitably cultured as Gav is, unlike myself and yourself.
I know. No, I know he's in Croatia. I know that.
Is that where he is it?
Yeah, he's gone to Croatia. So, listen, I can't wait for him to come back, because I've never been so far out of my comfort zone in all my life trying to actually do it. I'm much better at talking absolute nonsense and then having him rein me in. So
we better, because we did mention very, very quickly his article. We didn't really go into it in the end.
Oh, sorry.
The end, just very briefly. So the, as I say, the intro from Waterford and their announcement was, it has been brought to my attention that an article by Gavin Cooney of the 42.ie in relation to the sale of my football club, Waterford FC, has been released today. That's Richard Forrest. So from there then, as you say, he doesn't really refute any of the allegations, really. He's just annoyed that it got out there. But the valuation, David, the valuation. What do you reckon? Waterford United worth 1.2?
1.2 what? Lira? Like, do you know what I mean? This is we mentioned it earlier, it was a cracking story for Gav to get. And Joe, you know, one of the interesting things in the prospectus bit that was sent out, when they're talking about bigging up the academy and all the rest of it, and that's, this again ties back into not maybe getting sucked into what happens across the water where lads are just seen as assets. I know that is the case in football, that's nature, but like, if you're kind of saying, well, you can come in and then you can sell lads for X, Y, and Z, like, that's when it's getting a bit dangerous, I would say. Especially at this stage. Like, the whole thing should be about building it up, you know what I mean? But it's, fellas, listen, this is where I need Gav to be reining me in again, because I'd be going off on here a little bit. I just think, kudos to him for getting that story, and I think it shines a light on what's going on at Waterford.
It certainly does. It certainly does. I leave it in your capable hands to wrap it up there.
Well, there's my capable hands, what you call it. Now, listen, thanks very much for listening. As you can tell, I am brutal at doing this. So next time, Gav, don't leave us. Come back soon. And I'll leave it to Brano to play out with a suitable tune. Something from Glastonbury. We'll be right back. So from one scratchy, kind of dodgy link with Shane Keegan to a very calm, comfortable, and very, very resounding victory for the Irish women's team. Record 9-0 away win, and it just sets up the final two games. Just tantalising now, really, isn't it, Emmett?
Yeah, fantastic result, David. Obviously, it was expected, but I think the message coming out of camp all week was to certainly temper the expectations that it could be a little bit different this time around. It wasn't quite 11-0 like it was in Tala last November, but 9 will most certainly do. As you said there, equal the record away win, 3 big points, a step closer to World Cup qualification, 6 different scorers, Katie McCabe hat-trick. We could go on here. But yeah, just a convincing, resounding victory. Really promising. Just Ireland, I suppose, showed their dominance, and especially in the second half, I think really dictated the game, which obviously bodes well going into September, where there's a crucial doubleheader and Ireland can potentially reach a playoff and take another step closer to their first ever major tournament.
It's a mad one, because like I remember being on a couple of the Zoom calls last week when obviously the team flew out to Turkey, and it did like it sensed the level of focus. Like they could have easily just said, it's only Georgia. Sure, we absolutely battered them in the first game. We'll just rock out there a couple of days beforehand and do the same again. But considering the fact that some players obviously out of season, obviously Denise Sullivan had to come over, like the fact that I think it says a lot about the level of preparation and just the focus that was there, that there was a proper lead into the game to actually get the girls focused for it.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, and that was, as you say, the message coming out of camp the last week or two, that this game was being treated exactly like every other game in the group, the exact same as Sweden, the exact same as Finland, exact same as the heavyweights. Even though it's fairly fair to say that Georgia are unquestionable minnows in the group. I think it's 50 goals conceded now, 0 scored in 7 defeats. But yeah, a 10-day training camp in Turkey, a friendly against the Philippines in there. They won 1-0. I think there was a scrimmage match afterwards, 9v9, which was very successful too. Obviously, the purpose of picking Turkey was to really acclimatise to the conditions that were to come in Georgia. I don't think they just got the heat that they were expecting last night. I think it looked nearly like an Irish night looking from afar. But yeah, I think it was down to 20 degrees or so at 8 p.m. So it was certainly a come down from the testing conditions in Antalya the previous week. But yeah, as you say, I suppose really professional preparation, albeit most of these players are out of season, but really professional preparation and a really professional performance, which just reflects, I suppose, the upward trajectory that this team are on.
You mentioned there, even at the start, say, Vera Powell talking about tempering expectations. Like, it's still it's going to be a difficult end. Like, the fact that the games now, as you Finland, Slovakia, like, it's considering what happened in the last campaign and how that ended so badly. Like, even with something that Amber Barrett was speaking about how it's brought up in team meetings, but it's not something that they want to linger on and dwell on too much. But that must be in the back of their head. And I wonder, you see those scenes at the end of the match where Denise O'Sullivan is roaring in the middle of them all. And like, you get the feeling that there's something there that they definitely want to right that wrong a little bit.
Yeah, it's definitely, I think, something that they've tapped into this campaign. Like, they've been so close yet so far in the past. And like you say, most recently in the last campaign, like, that was utterly heartbreaking. They had it in their hands. They went to Kiev and they lost 1-0 after just an unfortunate own goal. But look, that's football. And then we all know what's happened afterwards. So Ukraine went to the playoffs. Northern Ireland bet them there. And they're preparing for their first ever major tournament in the Euros this summer across the water in England. So what an opportunity that would be for the Republic to be there. I suppose Finland are there as well. So kind of just rub salt into the wounds a little bit. But look, I suppose the team will look at that over the next few weeks and take motivation from that too. Obviously, it's not nice to be missing out on, I suppose, the biggest event in women's football this year. But they'll be firmly focused on the job that they have in hand, looking to September. Like you say, it's not going to be easy. Finland coming to Tala on the 1st of September. I think tickets are on sale on the 26th of July. That's certainly going to be a sellout. There's already so much hype around it, and there has been over the last few weeks. But I suppose, as you say, it was very, very important to take this Georgia game on its own and completely focus on that before looking down the line to September. But yeah, as far as I think we're aware, a win over Finland and Tala should do the job and should secure a playoff. But obviously there's a trip to Slovakia a few days later. But we all know what can happen when it comes down to, I suppose, the crunch and the pressure. So yeah, all focus is certainly on Finland and Tala on the 1st of September.
It's probably ideal as well, isn't it, then, that that Finland game is the first one of that double header, rather than travelling away to Slovakia and then having to maybe finish off the campaign, because it's probably the biggest game in recent history then, really, think about that Finland game, about what's at stake in terms of getting into that playoff room.
Yeah, it definitely is. It's undoubtedly the biggest game, I'd say, ever in the entire history of Irish women's football. Like, it's absolutely massive, and I suppose just all the noise around the team and all that too, and the expectations behind them now, and they really need to back it up and get to a first ever major tournament. It's huge, and you know, even if they don't get to the World Cup, but if they secure a playoff, that's certainly a success, because that's further than they've gotten to in quite some time. I think 2008 was the last playoff they got to against Iceland. But yeah, look, two massive challenges, I should say. Like you say, I suppose it's good that Finland comes first, but Finland are higher ranked. They'll obviously have the Euros under their belt this summer. They could do quite well there, so they could be coming in with momentum. But Ireland do just need to focus on themselves and their own job. But then we can't forget Slovakia either. Obviously, Slovakia came to Tala and held Ireland to a draw, and Ireland were really poor that night. There's, you know, you can't really dance around that fact, so can't let that happen again.
Is that an issue? Is that something as well? Like, you look at this Ireland team, and they still got that bit of a dodgy game in them still, or are they beginning to get that out of their system in terms of this campaign? If you look at it, like you mentioned, obviously, say Slovakia, like, it was a great result, I suppose, in the end out in Sweden, but obviously getting ahead and the goal was coming in that game. But is this a group of players and a team coming to this business end of the campaign who, you could still, you know what, yeah, you trust them and you back them, or do you still feel until they actually do deliver and get some of those past mistakes out of their heads, that's going to still be in the back of people's minds about them?
Yeah, that's certainly an interesting point, Dave. Like, you'd like to hope that things have changed, but I suppose there is obviously that scarring from the previous few campaigns and probably that little bit of PTSD, maybe more so for fans, I guess. But obviously, you know, players are professionals, and they're going to go about their business, and they're going to, I suppose, stress that things have changed and that they're more than capable to go and qualify. And, you know, the belief and confidence is there. And that's certainly something that I've noticed very recently coming out of the group, that, you know, they all talk with so much confidence and belief, and not only do they talk the talk, they walk the walk as well. And I think, yeah, as you say, in this campaign so far, we probably have seen that little bit of a shift, and that's probably come from playing higher ranked opposition. I know obviously the team went on a losing run last year. I think it was 7 they lost on the bounce, but they were all, you know, it was Germany at the end of the last campaign, and then moving into friendlies against higher ranked oppositions.
That was part of the plan, wasn't it? That was the whole point. That was the whole point. It wasn't about, say, having playing teams like Georgia and actually, yeah, running up big scores and not being in that environment. So hence then the Sweden game, where even though Sweden got played themselves back into it, the fact that Ireland had been against the level of opposition beforehand, they weren't too overawed by that.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. And that's something that Vera Powell always speaks about, you know, feeling that pressure at the top level, because, you know, there are girls in the squad who are like still playing in the Women's National League, you know, they aren't experiencing that intense level of pressure of senior international football, or perhaps that you get in the Women's Super League. So obviously that was the plan, and you know, they probably came under a little bit of pressure at the time, but in the long run that has all paid dividends, because as you say, you know, what good is hammering Georgia 9-0 or 11-0? Like, you know, obviously it's more momentum, and it's a game that had to be played, and you know, it will up the confidence and belief in the camp as well ahead of September, but what good is it at the end of the day?
Exactly. And also, if you look at it as well, even just it's difficult when you're picking out, say, individuals, but if you're talking about, say, progression, you're talking there about players who are maybe making that jump as well from the Women's National League. But say Jessica Zhu plays last night. By the time the next international window comes around in September, you would like to think she's going to have a few more games under her belt with West Ham. She's obviously gone, so she's obviously progressed, isn't that right? So, like, you wonder, is that there could be that element as well of progression within the squad, even in the short term, because it's something very telling. I remember, when were we now? 28th of June, so I think it would have been the start of June or maybe late May, and chatting with Katie McCabe, and she was making that point, just ramming home with all the players, not making allowances for certain players saying, well, you're playing at a certain level. Like, she's on, lads, she's on girls saying, like, you have to get over, you have to be at it, improve, you have to get to a different level if we're going to progress. And like, driving those standards, it's one of those where you get the sense within it that there is that focus there where they want to actually go as far as they can and not just settle for maybe playing here and then getting the odd Ireland cap. It's a group of players who want to try and push their ceiling as high as possible.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, you know, that's the standard across the group. Obviously, Katie McCabe drives that, and, you know, Vera Powell as well obviously drives it too and expects serious standards from her players. But I suppose they've all bought into that. And, you know, that's the messaging that's always coming from the group. This is the best group of players that the women's national team has had in recent memory. And there's still a few big names not in there through injury and whatnot else. And it's important that they don't let this opportunity pass them by, because it feels like, you know, there have been missed chances in the past, but this is just a massive opportunity and they need to grab it with both hands and seize it. And as you say, Jess Zhu, I think, you know, she was really good last night. She looked brilliant, you know, getting into those pockets really lively and creating things going forward, was playing a little bit higher up the pitch, which was great to see. And it just shows the strength and depth and the competition within the squad as well, because I think Jess Zhu has certainly staked a claim that, you know, she could be starting against Finland in September. So who do you have to take out then? Obviously, Jamie Finn was missing from midfield last night because of her yellow card tally. You know, they didn't want to risk her. I don't know if she would have started or if she would have just, you know, been on the bench, but that's a big player previously in the campaign who was missing last night. And yeah, I think, I suppose it'd probably be remiss of us not to note a few really good individual performances. I know the team certainly won't want to dwell on them. It's more of a team effort, but I thought Megan Connolly was just outstanding last night. You know, she pulled the strings in midfield. I think she had 3 assists. She had a goal as well. Katie, obviously, with the hat trick, 2 assists for her too. And they're both fantastic. And then, you know, you've Niamh Fahey and Abby Larkin both scoring their first senior international goals at very different stages of their respective careers. I think that was Niamh's 104th cap, and I don't know where it hit off her to go into the back of the net, but it goes goal at the end of the day.
Didn't she say there was a hint of Maradona about it? It put a bit of a hand on.
I think she did afterwards. But yeah, you could see afterwards just how much it meant to her and the team by the celebrations. And likewise with Abby Larkin's goal. Obviously, 17-year-old kid tearing it up. You know, it's not easy to make that step onto the senior international stage, particularly not with that much experience at senior level. Like, she's not playing week in, week out for Shells in the Women's National League. So for her to come on and to look as good as she did, and obviously to get her first goal, was great. And you have Louise Quinn with 2 trademark headed goals as well, and Denise O'Sullivan to nicely round it off in injury time with a deserved goal for another phenomenal performance from her.
But it just shows you as well where it's like any team, but especially international football, when you have that solid base and you have those, say, performers, I should say, make it, who can just give you, say, a 7 or an 8 out of 10 or every week or every game, you know, will get you through. And then the likes of, say, Katie McCabe or Denise O'Sullivan, who maybe have that little bit of magic, it is just so important. And it's going to come down to that, you would imagine, just teeing up these games now in September. And so that first one, though, with Finland, it's going to be like massive, that in terms of having that structure and having that sense of discipline about them, and then also being capable of when it's needed, having that bit of just a bit of ruthlessness in the final third. It seems as if Ireland have that.
Yeah, definitely, and that is something that they had struggled with, I suppose, in the past. You know, things could be going really, really well, and then things would just break down with the last ball or two in the final third. And, you know, obviously Ireland has prided itself on defence for as long as we all remember. But, you know, to have that flair in attack with the likes of McCabe and your other creative players like O'Sullivan, Little John, you know, things are really clicking there. And I think that was probably what was one of the most pleasing aspects last night, that they were clinical when they needed to be. They were ruthless when they needed to be, particularly in the second half. I know there was a little bit of a lull before half time, but you know, they came back out after the reset and took control of the game, grabbed it by the scruff of the neck and went for it. And even just the times of the goals, you know, I think it was, you know, every 15 minutes or so. I don't know the average now. I have them written down. It was like 6, 12, 18, 45 plus 1, 49, 73, 75, 82, 90 plus 3. So certainly kept on our toes as reporters. But, you know, the regular goal scoring, obviously, against a weak opposition like that is important. And it just breeds confidence into the players, as we say, ahead of September. And, you know, it'll be important that they can reflect back to it and tap into it, that, you know, these girls can score goals, and that's what's needed in September. They will need to score, you know. You're not going to be able to just ride your luck and hold out for a 0-0 in Tala. You want to score, get on the front foot and, you know, get the job done.
No reason. Well, hopefully that confidence maintains and continues over the summer, and by the time September comes around, as players fit and ready to go for it, because as you said, it's like shaping up to be, it is going to be the biggest game in women's football history and for Ireland. So Emmett, thanks very much for filling us in. Thank you.
Cheers for having me, David.
No worries. Take care.
Hello, thank you for joining us for what should be a great game.
Fourth official couldn't allow him on because the fourth official never had cheap.
Well, I have a heating up the baby, did he? Unless he's breastfeeding, he should be all right.